I'm Roddy Peoples. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I'm former owner and founder of the VSA, Voice of Southwest Agriculture Radio Network.
I'm going to talk to you about history. Here we are at the 75th anniversary of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. How long have you been involved with this organization, Roddy?
I joined in 1956 when the meetings were in Chicago, and I've attended every meeting since then, I think, except one. So I've been in here 62 conventions and still enjoying it. I'm fully retired now. I'm not doing any active broadcasting, but I love to come back and see the young folks coming in and see my old friends.
It's a pleasure to see you here every year and to see you maintain this interest in the NAFB. What is it about it that keeps you coming back?
Well, I joined NAFB in the spring of 1956 at a regional meeting in St. Louis. My wife and I went up there. We had a little four-month-old son. And I met a man there by the name of Jack Jackson, who was a farm director at KCMO here in Kansas City. Now, he happened to be an old Texas Aggie, and I was a graduate of Texas A&M, so we hit it off pretty soon. And at that meeting, I got a call about 2 months later. I was working in Ada, Oklahoma, and Jack says, I've got a guy out in Dodge City, Kansas, that is looking for a farm director for the radio station there. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'm going to recommend you. Well, I got that job. That was the first job I really got paid money for being a farm, doing full-time farm and ranch news, the first time I'd ever been able to do that. That was my first job, Dodge City, Kansas, and I loved it out there. If I had not had asthma badly because of the wheat and the sorghum pollen in the spring and in the fall, I might have still been there, but we liked western Kansas. I remember going out there, and the manager of the radio station, KGNO, was Wendell Elliott, and when I arrived, he had a brand new tape recorder for me to use in the field, all mine. Now, this was a magnificent instrument in that time. It was an aluminum case about, I'd say, 18 inches long and 10 inches high and 10 inches deep. And it was a wind-up tape recorder. I think it held a 15-minute tape, maybe a 30. I can't remember that for sure. Had a little crank on it that you snapped into the top. When you opened the top, you took the crank out of the end of it and stuck it up there and keep it. Then when you wanted to wind it up, you take the crank out and stick it in here just like you'd crank an old F-12 Farmall or F-30 or F-20, you know, and you wind it up. And so I wound this thing up and started doing an interview one time, and I wasn't watching, but it started to run down. And when I finished the interview, I was concentrating on that, and I looked down and the tape recorder's no longer running. So I taught myself to time the interviews, and it worked out better when I would make a shorter interview as a rule because the tape recorder wouldn't run down. That was before the age of batteries. That was my first experience in farm broadcasting, but I owe it to NAFB because I went to that first regional meeting in St. Louis, met Jack Jackson, and he got me a new job, which I really wanted. So from then on, I've been coming to every one of the meetings. I went to the fall national convention that year in Chicago. I remember that our featured motivational speaker was Dr. Herb True from Northwestern University, graduate of Notre Dame, quite a motivational speaker in his day, and he just had me climbing the walls. I want to get back to Dodge City to go back to work. I could hardly wait to get back there and really do the job well, you know, as well as I could. And it just went on from there, Tom, you know.
You presided over this organization. Tell me about that year and what was going on. What motivated you to run to be an officer of this?
Well, a lot of my friends wanted me to be an officer, and I suppose there's a little bit of ego involved. After you've been in the organization a long time, you kind of want to be at the head of it. And I've had people say, well, what do you think your legacy was? And I honestly can't say that I remember what I had, if I had any legacy whatsoever. But I enjoyed getting to go around and represent the organization at various conventions, the Farm Bureau, the National Cattlemen's Association, going to NAMA meetings and that sort of thing. And being the president of NAFB carries a certain amount of prestige with it. And I have to admit that I'm a little bit vulnerable to that sort of thing. I'm susceptible to that. And I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know that I accomplished a great deal for the organization, but they seem to appreciate it anyway. And I had a good year as president.
Tell me how this business has changed.
Well, I think that's the notable thing, and I don't know that if I were to try to enter it today, I would know how to do it, because we've had now we have all the social networks, and we have the web, and while I use a computer, I don't know how it fits into farm broadcast. I see that it does. I just wouldn't know how to begin to start to have a web page. I know that Ron Hayes in Oklahoma with the RON Network, he is real versed in this, and he makes high use of the website that he has, as well as the radio broadcast. Now, what I like about the age we're in now is the ease with which you can have a network of stations and get your broadcasts out to them. You don't have to depend on AT&T or Southwestern Bell or somebody like that to set up a phone loop. You can do a remote from anywhere you want to. You can do a live broadcast. You can either tape it or you can upload it to the web. The stations can download it. It's far easier with the technology that's available today. My only concern would be trying to use the web for a website for my own interests on the air.
You were in this business, have been in this business for a long time, Roddy. Obviously, you see value in communicating with farmers and ranchers. What's important about farm broadcasters and their interaction with farmers and ranchers?
Well, yes, you get this feedback when you're out in the field, when you're going to a meeting somewhere. There's just a feeling that you get that they appreciate what you're doing. I tried to get a lot of news on when I was on the air about the children, their 4-H club work and future farmer work, and about the work that ranchers and farmers were doing if they were recognized for being perhaps a good conservation farmer. I'd like to get an interview with them and put it on the air. A kid that's got a good project, maybe he's won an award, maybe he gets to go to the 4-H Club Congress or something like that. I'd like to get them on the air and have them talk about it and what they did and why they did it. And to me, I think that's what makes the farm broadcaster such an integral part of the daily life of farmers and ranchers even today. And the young people coming into farming. Now, they depend on the web. That's where I say I don't know that I would know how to serve those people except for just being on the radio. I'd still know how to do that, and I would enjoy that. But I'm not sure I'd enjoy getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. That would be 2 or 3 hours earlier than I used to get up to get the website going before I went on the air.
What was your favorite part about this?
Traveling and getting out in the field and going to farm tours and the meetings with cattlemen, sheep producers. Where I was working in San Angelo, sheep and wool were a huge industry. San Angelo at that time, and I guess it still is the wool capital of the United States. And wool and the sheep and goat industry are a big part of the culture in West Texas. And I enjoyed going to the meetings of all of those people and going to the county livestock shows and reporting on that. That was the favorite part of it. I did my own advertising sales, and while I was reasonably good at it, that was never a favorite part of my work.
You also were a private pilot. Yeah. And so traveled to a lot of the places that you went via your own aircraft. What are the advantages of being able to do that?
Well, if you had a network like I did and ended up with more than 70 stations all over the state of Texas, you can appreciate the value of an airplane that you can get around in. But my wife says, I took up farm broadcasting in order to justify being a pilot, which there may be more truth than I like to admit. But I started flying when I was 13 years old, unbeknownst to my parents. I traded my work at the airport. I work on weekends. I'd trade that for flight instruction. And finally, when I was 14 years old, my mother found out about it. I was about 3 months shy of 14 years of age. And she says, if you won't fly until you're 14, I won't give my blessing, but I won't try to stop you. My dad didn't seem to care that much whether I was flying or not. It seemed to be okay with him. So I waited until I was 14 and then went on. My mother, she came out and watched me fly on my 14th birthday with an instructor. And then I soloed when I was 16. But then at 17, I went off to Texas A&M and spent the next 20 years getting into education and getting married and so forth. And I didn't fly again until about 67. And then I started trading advertising on my radio network for the local Cessna dealers in Midland and San Angelo for rental of the airplanes and instruction. And I flew that way for about 7 years, and then I bought an airplane and was able to get around all over Texas. It just really facilitated getting out to meetings. I could be off the air in the morning at 6:30, and I had the studios right there on the airport. I just walk over, maybe, or drive. It took us a 5-minute walk and get in the plane, and I would be somewhere else in Texas by the time anything started and be home for supper, you know. And that way, I didn't have any employees to substitute for me, so I had to be a careful pilot to make sure I got home due to tomorrow's broadcast, you know. But it enabled me, and I enjoyed it. I love flying. Betty Mae and I got to fly all over the United States, coast to coast and border to border at one time or another. And we had a Cessna 172 to begin with, and then we're able to trade up 7 years later to a Cessna 182, which I called a real pickup because it was, you could carry anything you'd put in it almost. And we had a lot of fun going to meetings all over and traveling, some for personal pleasure. But I loved it. And I still have my certificate, my airman certificate, but I haven't flown in 20 years now.
Tell me about your history. You say you started in Western Kansas. You ended in San Angelo, yeah. Texas. Where in between?
Well, my first job out of college was at KADA in Ada, Oklahoma. I got my first class radio telephone engineer's license. That's what got me the job, because you couldn't operate a radio station without an engineer on duty. And a lot of times you were there by yourself, so you had to have a license. And the manager happened to have married a girl from my hometown in Texas, you know, and he said, well, if you get that license, I'll hire you. So that was my first job, but I did mostly, well, whatever they wanted me to do. I was a disc jockey. I reported the news, didn't write any copy. And then I had this opportunity I mentioned of going to the spring regional convention of NAFB, meeting Jack Jackson and getting a job in Dodge City. And so that was my next job. That was 1956. And stayed there till 1959, had another opportunity at KLIK in Jefferson City. And so I went over there, but the owner of the station, 3 months after we got there, and had just bought our first house, by the way, he owned the station also in St. Joseph, KFEQ. He wanted to bring his associate farm director in St. Joseph down to Jeff City, take my job, have me go up and take the other guy's job in St. Joseph. I didn't want to go from top guy to assistant guy. So I just resigned, and I was very fortunate, kind of headstrong about it. But Ben Luty had become manager of KWFT in Wichita Falls. Now, Ben Luty at that time was very famous among the farm broadcasters because he had managed WIBW in Topeka for many, many years. And he and Dr. Juan, Forrest Juan, bought KWFT. And at the time, he happened to want an assistant farm director to go to work with Earl Sargent. So I went down to Wichita Falls, and that's how I got back to Texas. You know, we Texans like to say we came back as fast as we could. And I worked there with Earl and Ben for nearly 5 years. And then I started the VSA network and started at first in Midland. But 4 years later, we moved to San Angelo because I was spending more time on the road between Midland and San Angelo than I was in Midland. So it was just a stronger agricultural area. And the schools were better. And we had two little children that we wanted to be in a good public school. So we moved to San Angelo, and that's where I ended up for the next 28 years. Now we moved to Dallas. We moved to Dallas when I retired.
Anything, any regrets?
No, I don't have any regrets whatsoever. I feel very blessed that I've gotten the life that I've had. It is, I was able to have my network. I guess you might say I kind of lived the American dream. Was able to sell it for a price that I wanted. It enabled me to retire. I got to fly everywhere I wanted to, my own plane, something I had always wanted to do, and got a wonderful wife. And we celebrated our 65th anniversary this year. We've been married 65 years in August. So, yes, I have no regrets at all.